What up, what up, everybody? This is Double G for the Fight Game Podcast. John LaRocca and I here on Thursday night, just one night after we were both at AEW Dynamite in the Cow Palace. Did you ever think you'd see a wrestling show in the Cow Palace again?
I figured I would, and it would be AEW, just because knowing Tony Khan's fandom of old school wrestling and the old school building that's still standing, the historic ones, and Cow Palace is one of them. So I had a feeling it'd be AEW, and I definitely would probably be the one I go to, and it was.
Yeah. Do you think, now we're kind of teasing a little bit of what we're going to talk about, but after Friday, so later today when most people listen to this, you're not going to Rampage. I'm going to Rampage. Jeremy Finestone is coming to Rampage with me. Richard, our buddy Richard Becerra, is in town. I will see him. I'm actually going to meet up with him.
Take a picture with Richard, dinner. Man, and send it off to me. I feel bad. I can't make it. I got stuff going on that night, that day, that evening, and my wife came the old. What do you mean Friday? I'm like, I kind of like threw it. I threw it in like that night when I got home. I'm like, you know, there's tickets for two nights, and she's like, you want to go again? You know, I was like, oh yeah.
So all that is to say, do you think Tony Khan, if he's going to run the Bay Area again, do you think we come back to this format of Cow Palace, Chase Center?
I would not. It wasn't a strong draw. I got the official numbers. It looks like 3,200.
Oh, really?
And 3,200 paid and 400 comps.
Interesting.
So we did 3,000 in the first Cow Palace show for All Pro Wrestling. So pretty proud of that. We're, you know, from not being just a little indie to doing that. And they have national television.
Probably the same people who were there.
Yeah, a lot of people. I mean, that first Cow Palace show, obviously Cody was hot and stuff, but I think a lot of it was the nostalgia of wrestling back at the Cow Palace when we did it too, because it was a very long time since wrestling was at the Cow Palace.
Yeah, I mean, we can give a little bit of information just so people know. APW, our local Bay Area independent, ran the Cow Palace. I think some people thought Marcus was a little nuts to do that, and he worked his butt off. And Cody Rhodes in the main event against someone who you do not like to name since you booked the show, but we can say Joey Ryan. And that was a really big show. It felt big for the Bay Area. Yeah. Now, when you guys came back, do you remember what you did the second time?
It was like 2,500. And, you know, I think a little bit of the nostalgia was off. And, you know, the card was pretty good. We had the, you know, Rey Mysterio on it, and
early Jungle Boy was in the Battle Royal.
Jungle Boy, and we had, you know, the usuals, Jeff Cobb, JR Kratos, you know. But the first Cow Palace show, we had a lot of special guests there.
Is that when you got to talk to Pat Patterson?
Yeah, I was trying to get Pat Patterson to go back out there after he went out there to smoke a cigarette in the Cow Palace building.
Well, we were just there. They're not really checking anything.
Well, this lady came up, this little lady, she looked like she smoked 12 packs a day. Came up to old Pat and said, hey, you can't smoke that in here. And he's like, he goes, okay, sure. And just blows a big old puff like out, and he just wouldn't put it down. And I'm like, oh my God. And what great memories. That was a great time. And Kevin Sullivan was there. That was great. And
yep.
Fun times. But we met Luke Perry for the first time there.
Yep. That was my favorite memory of the Cow Palace ever.
Talking Ric Flair documentary with Luke Perry.
Yeah, he just kept saying, I just love wrestling. Every answer was, I just love wrestling.
Yeah.
All right. So it's not like, you know, and then New Japan ran here 5 years ago or something, and they did like seven, I think.
Seven. Yeah.
Six, seven around seven, there. Yeah. So, you know, we have had wrestling at the Cow Palace. AEW being the level of professional wrestling company that they are, they should have probably drawn double what they did. Mm-hmm. Now, I some people were just asking me, like, what is the reasons? And Dave and I talked about this way in the beginning when this was the booking, and we said, like, this is probably not going to be for the best. Now, San Francisco in of itself has never, like, the city of San Francisco, I don't even remember when there was like a big wrestling show. You and I saw a New Japan show at San Francisco before. Mm-hmm. Well, but like, what what
New
arena
Japan was pretty big. Sorry, I think New Japan was pretty big because I think right now, honestly, it's timing. I think if AEW had done this like maybe a year ago, I think they would have had a bigger crowd there. Well, like when New Japan came, they're still pretty hot, you know, really hot actually.
But I'm talking San Francisco versus Daly City.
Got
like
oh,
the
got
physical
it, got
city
it.
Of San Francisco, which is interesting why AEW decided that San Francisco is a city.
Mm-hmm.
It is connected to Daly City a little bit, but San Jose probably draws more tickets. Mm-hmm. If they were to find somewhere to turn in San Jose, but yeah, like San Francisco hasn't been a draw for wrestling. WWE tried to go here a couple different times for Raw, and they did less. They did like what AEW did at the Cow Palace. So I guess my point is like the reason that I think that this show didn't draw some of what you said, but I also think that this market is a slightly more COVID-19 sensitive than other markets. Now I think that stuff is kind of going away a little bit, but I do know I follow the San Francisco Giants very closely. They are having a hard time drawing fans on a game basis. They won 107 games 2 years ago and did not sell that place out. Last year they played about 50-50 ball and you could get a seat. So San Francisco a little bit more conservative when it comes to sort of, you know, just bum rushing the show and getting back out there, but also more picky with their dollar.
Mm-hmm. True, but the tickets are very cheap. I mean, for the most part, I mean, you can get a really good seat. Now, that place is a good place to watch wrestling in. I know it's not the newest building. We'll talk about our issues we had with it, but visual wise, like sitting there, like there's not a really bad seat in the house.
No, I mean, it's just tight, just cramped.
Yeah. You're where I was sitting, right, I ended up seeing it was like perfect, you know. I think I'd like to be higher up than on the floor because mm-hmm. I don't want, you know. But I think too, I get what you're saying about fans in the Bay Area being picky. Yes, of course, inflation, all that stuff. Like when you come to the Giants, San Francisco Giants, I think when they were 107 games winners, it was still very much at the height of COVID. But I think, you know, they do it this year, I bet you anything they'll be drawing way more than I just think people are loosening up on that a bit. But I just think right now AEW as a whole just doesn't feel hot. And I think if they would have came last year, they would have done, I think, at the minimum double of what they did tonight, you know. But
all right, we're going to table that for a second and we're going to come back to it. I wanted to give a quick shout out to Paul Fontaine and Jeff Hawkins from the Dynamite Show. The Dynamite Show, which Jeff joined a little bit later. Parker, who used to write for this website, Parker was the Paul's original co-host, and Jeff replaced Paul, but they just celebrated their 2-year anniversary on the Fight Game Media Network, where you have a show as well. So a happy second anniversary to them. You and I are doing a show on WCW 96. We just put up our second episode earlier this week covering, you know, January through mid-February. It's Vince and Eric just going at each other's necks. Brian Pillman, the beginning of the Loose Cannon. And you and I have talked about doing a show on Monday to kind of go over the pay-per-view. Now, from my perspective of being there live and from your perspective of watching the TV product, I think also next week I'm going to try really hard, but people remember Liam O'Rourke, who wrote the Brian Pillman book Crazy Like a Fox. Mm. I'm in touch with him. Another friend, Kyle Ross, they do a podcast together for the Top Rope Nation Network. And I want to bring both of them on, and I want to talk to Liam somewhat about some of this early WCW stuff. But I'm going to make sure that if I do get them on, we're also going to talk WWE, because Kyle's more anti WWE than most people. So I kind of want to get his thoughts on how he sees what I think most people consider a hot period in WWE, and business says that they're hot. Yeah. So we're going to do that. And then, so we'll go Monday night. Ah, we got to go up against Brian and Dave. That's not the best night to go up on this network, I will say. But we'll go up Monday with our Revolution recap, and if I can get Liam and Kyle on, I'll throw that on the back end, and then Thursday night we'll come back. But at the end of this show, John and I, you know, we'll give our live thoughts, but we're gonna then give way to myself and Chris Samsa and Jeremy. Our goal was to create the greatest New Japan Cup bracket of all time. so we did that, and so I'll play that after this. Okay, so thumbs up, thumbs down. Let's talk about
A quick couple shout outs myself.
Oh yeah, go for it.
Shout out to Charles for hooking up the ticket for Wednesday. I greatly appreciate hopping on our
Discord.
Hopping on Discord. And also a quick shout out to Brian Thighslap Burke.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, I just want to give him a shout out. He's a good brother. So, all right, let's do this, man. Thumbs up, thumbs down, likes, dislikes. What we got here? What do you want to start with?
I'm assuming his nickname is Thigh Slap because he
it's an inside joke.
He makes fun of the wrestlers who visibly slap their thigh.
It's just an inside joke. It'll pop him, and that's all it's for. But yeah.
All right, I'm gonna let you do your thumbs up first.
Yeah, my thumbs up is for a indie wrestler out there in the Massachusetts area, Fancy Ryan Clancy. He just wrestled this past Sunday for Beyond Wrestling. He wrestled Zack Sabre Jr. Young kid, I believe he's only 24 years old. He's making great strides on the independent scene. I think he's going to be a name you're going to hear a lot more of come 2024, 2025. Student of the game type of kid. He had a great match with Zack Sabre Jr. on Beyond Wrestling. It was easily by far the best match on that show. And he did a tremendous job. It was a really good match. And if people have IWTV, they subscribe to that network, they can watch that match. And you know, it's just really cool. You see like a young worker like that get put in this position with his biggest match of his career, and he hits a home run. It was like a really, really cool thing to see. So shout out to Fancy Ryan Clancy.
All right, my thumbs up is going to be a little hypocritical, and I'll explain here in a second. There is a story that WWE was interested in a Brock Lesnar versus Bray Wyatt match. And what came out of that story is that Brock may have finagled or maybe power slammed his way out of being in this match with Bray Wyatt. Now, that part of it is why you have leverage in wrestling, why you have power, why you have business mind, because Brock knows that the people who face Bray Wyatt do not end up better than they began. That has just been fact for the last several years. The reason why this is hypocritical, though, is because I am cheerleading for Brock, saying, you know what, Brock, you know what you're worth. You get what you're worth. You sign a great contract. You have say. And if you don't want to do something, you use that leverage and you kind of take your ball and go home until they beg you to come back and usually give you a better contract. But the reason why that is hypocritical is because as I am commending that behavior, I've also dissed WWE for not caving to that behavior, or not even that exact behavior, but a similar move. And obviously talking about Sasha Banks and Naomi, where they, you know, if we're being equal here, they tried to use their leverage to get something. And I think it actually worked out for Sasha. She got out of the contract. Now she's doing other stuff. I don't know if it's worked for Naomi. I hope that she's got something cooking, because I think she's very talented as well. But my thumbs up also felt very hypocritical. So I had to call myself out at the same time, going like, do your thing, Brock. And then seeing it not work out for the other two women and me just being like, I wish it did. And maybe it did for Sasha. At the end it did. Maybe not immediately. But so Brock Lesnar thumbs up for making sure that, you know, your character and your value stays very, very high within WWE.
Yeah, when Bray Wyatt made that challenge on SmackDown to the winner of Bobby Lashley, Brock Lesnar, I don't know. I like Bray. It's just I don't think it really works with Brock, right? And I just kind of hope they finally find something. We figure out what the heck Bray is doing and what, you know what I mean? I don't know.
Did you see the creative for Bobby Lashley?
No, I've not seen that. No. Hurt Business back? Have we been to Hurt Business back yet?
So Bobby was leaving the ring and on the video screen was Bray Wyatt and spandex doing like fake muscle stuff, like in a supposedly funny way. I didn't find it. I mean, it was entertaining just because, you know, the character who plays Bray Wyatt is a pretty entertaining guy, but it was not, it was not money. What you would call money, a WrestleMania build. It did not get you to want to watch the match. It kind of made you go, so that's all they got, huh?
Yeah. I mean, the Brock Lesnar match for almost. I always mess that guy's name up.
Well, Brock messes it up too, so don't worry.
I don't know if people are hanging on it, but honestly, like, it's not going to be like, it'd be entertaining, you know, 3 minute match of Brock suplexing a giant. You know, that's going to be fun. I think there's, you know, there's bigger matches I'm looking forward to. Brock's been there for a long time. One of my favorites, but you know, he's been there for a very long time. So I'm okay with him just, you know, having a nice little 3 minute suplex a giant match and go home.
Yeah, no, I'm fine with it as well. It's not going to be anything big. The part that I like about it is it puts MVP back on the main television, because I think he's so talented when it comes to the mic. And with the exception of one part of this interview segment with MVP and Brock Lesnar, I thought it was magic, man. Like, Moonshine Brock. This might be my favorite Brock Lesnar character. He asked MVP to suck down some white lightning with him, and MVP was like, "Nah, I got the champagne here." And he's like, "I don't want to drink alone." And so MVP had to drink it, and he's taking the swig, and he like took like three shots in his mouth, and then he choked and he spit it on Brock. And that's the moment where everyone was like, "Vince is back," because Vince loves the spitting in the face and throwing up and stuff.
Babyface Brock is pretty entertaining to watch. Cowboy Babyface Brock, because he's just, looks like he's having a great time with it. And I don't know why he's, you know, you always feel like he's looked like he just wanted to get the hell out of there. He probably still does.
He's all mad all the time.
I don't know, man. I don't know. He just seems happy to be out there doing this babyface, you know, the hat, the tip of the hat, I don't know. He's having a good time. So
I'm going to try to get Moonshine Brock over. We'll see. If
that's cool. Okay. Moonshine Brock. I'm with you on that. I like that.
All right. So thumbs down. Did you have any thumbs down for this week?
I'm going to go with AEW just because what they gave us at the Cow Palace on Wednesday. And we're going to talk about that. But a lot of other things I've kind of I didn't realize this until I was talking to some people today, because I was trying to do some research for the show. And I did not realize Sting was on the poster. And so there's a few people that said they were bummed that Sting wasn't there. One has a young son who was looking forward to seeing Sting.
Yeah.
And he wasn't there. And also, surprisingly, being the Bay Area, one of the most pushed acts, you know, on the show was Powerhouse Hobbs from the Bay Area, from East Palo Alto. I found out zero merchandise for Powerhouse Hobbs.
Oh, wow.
Which I thought is a huge mistake. So,
yeah, that's a mistake. And I hope that the new merchandise isn't him holding that Sonic ring. holding it up. Like, I hope that's not the merch.
I'm surprised my son came out, like, you know, he's supposed to be in bed at this time. I was watching a little bit for the show. I wanted to see the difference between live and on television. And he came out and he saw that. And I think he's kind of half tired, like looking at that. I thought for sure he's going to say the Sonic ring. I just called it the golden ass gasket. But
okay, my thumbs down, and this is an unfortunate one. MLW. They signed a deal to be on Reels, and a good friend of ours does social media for them. And so MLW gets this, I think it's a 10-week run. And all of a sudden, there's news that came out that Reels is going to be on Peacock. So I think what they're doing is they're running the feed that also is on cable of Reels. Just on Peacock. Peacock has a few different live feeds just by subscribing to Peacock, one of NBC, obviously. And so in that deal, because Peacock is also a big WWE's, you know, a big content partner for them. You can't have WWE and MLW content on the same app per WWE. So I think MLW is getting pushed out. Now, Reels itself, I think their statement was sort of a non-statement saying, like, you know, nothing has happened yet. We're not, we want to do everything, mm-hmm. you know, to make sure MLW isn't harmed or whatever. But, you know, when you're on, if you're using Peacock to watch this Reels feed and it's MLW time watching the MLW show, I think it's blacked out. So they don't show it.
They should put the main event on there.
That's, oh yeah, WWE show. Like those, like Black Saturday all over again.
Yeah.
and so it, I mean, what it looks like, and I'm not going to say that this is going to happen because I'm just literally just speculating, but it sounds like this deal with Reels just might be grand opening, grand closing, and like,
yep.
Hasta luego, see you later, you know, which is unfortunate because, you know, Court works hard to try and get his TV, and, you know, he's on mm-hmm. BN. You know, they've been in other areas. There's a lawsuit with WWE because of the Fast deal that they had supposedly. So he's working, and this seemed like a nice break for them. And then now this thing happened. So this is not a diss in any way for MLW, but it's just thumbs down for them for the business reason. And it's unfortunate. And I personally, like, everyone has some sort of opinion of social media Court Bauer, but I've always said that dude's always been great with me, and I've helped him out with stuff, and he's, you know, he's been really nice to do stuff for us. So I like him a lot, but supposedly there's people kind of celebrating this, and I'm like, nah, come on, man. Like, hey, he's the little guy.
Nobody is celebrating, but it's also not shocking at all.
No.
The alpha dog, you know, just taking over there and making sure the little dog doesn't get on television on that network. And, you know, there's heat there. There's that lawsuit. And, you know, the WWE's they're going to mess with them back. And
yeah,
came to be expected. Let's hope MLW shows up somewhere else. But, you know, what's weird about MLW for my Take It Home podcast, I wanted to cover MLW's first show on Reels. And I went on Xfinity. I didn't watch it live, so I decided to go my on demand under Reels. All they showed network shows, available shows, no MLW.
So MLW was not on demand.
That's no. So yeah. So I was like, all right, man, I moved on to something else. But yeah, so, and I don't think it's on YouTube, but YouTube, they only show like a couple minute clips of stuff. So.
Yeah. Bummer. All right. Let's talk about some AEW Dynamite, our live thoughts on it. Let's scale back just a second.
Mm-hmm.
Thoughts on if you are now, this is different because the Cow Palace actually means something to us, but I know probably some people's maybe first time going to a live AEW show. Yeah. That building is older than dirt, does not look modern in any way. And if I'm running pro wrestling, and I completely get the Tony Khan thing, like, I actually commend him for this, probably one of his dreams. Like, go chase your goals, man. One of your dreams to run to Cow Palace, boom, you did it. But I don't think AEW should be running these like really low rent buildings. It just makes I don't think the product looked very good. And I don't know how it was shot. You could tell me because you could mm-hmm. see it. But I remember we got there and I took a picture, and I didn't even think about the empty seats in the back. I just wanted to take a picture for how close we were. And people just replying, going like, oh my gosh, there's nobody there.
Well, you're on the opposite end of the hard cam. So I sat under the hard cam. So I got that shot. And originally I sat across from the screen, but there was a big camera crane in front of us.
Yeah,
it's really annoying. So, Heartbreak Kid David Rubio did some scouting, found a better spot over underneath the hard cam. No one, and he just waved me over, and I walked over. No one said anything. And at first, actually, when we first sat down, Heartbreak Kid, he bought a ticket like a few boxes over. We were in box. Mm-hmm. I was in the box 3. He was like in box 5. And our section was just no one there. So he was like, is it told the usher lady, she's like, he's like, hey, is it cool if we sit together here? And she's like, I don't care. No one's here. You know?
Yeah. So yeah, it's good. I mean, it's so good for you guys.
Yeah. Good for us. So we end up moving in a really cool spot where no one was around us. Not, you know, I felt better too, cause I'm still rather be away from people at events mm-hmm. like that as much as possible. So as well, but a great spot. And yeah, but on camera, on rewatching some of the replay back on TV, it looked like it was shot like any old Dynamite. You tell they're cropping it hard on the lower yeah. bowl there, and but some of the stuff they missed, bro. Like I had to watch that ladder match again because I had to do some timing, and we'll talk about that. But you know, they remember when Powerhouse Hobbs came out of his entrance, that reaction he got.
Yeah. Muted,
not shown on camera.
Really?
They came back to, I don't know if it's in picture in picture, but it doesn't matter because you're not gonna hear it in picture in picture anyways.
Yeah.
But when they came back, yeah, they're all in the ring, and the bell rang.
Oh my God.
Stupid, right? It's like, I don't know. I think
especially
that was,
they knew he was gonna win.
Yeah. So you show like, I would have shown all the entrance, even though Commander came out wrong or missed his thing, but still, whatever. Yeah. But you know, I would have showed the entrance, man. You can't. To me, I hate that. Like even on Rampage, they would do this a lot. I think they do it still. They just, the first match is already in the ring. I don't like that. I think you need the entrance. Entrance helps make the stars. You know.
Yeah, it's because he's got an hour and 30 minutes to put into 60 minutes, so he cuts that part out, I think.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. It's just, you can shave some of the match off, but it's, yeah, I was really disappointed in that.
Yeah, that's crazy. So, yeah, all that is to say is, if you want to present Major League Wrestling, I think there are people, a lot, I would say a good number of people understood mm-hmm. what that building was, but it just, I don't know, just the way that it looked, how old it was when we passed by, the city that it's in, nothing against Daly City, but it's not like a giant downtown or anything, right? So
how does it take, like, I don't know, 45 minutes to get into this parking lot when there's a huge parking lot? Like,
yeah, they didn't have that.
They were not
very
prepared
well
for this crowd. It seemed like to me. Plus, they had, and then just before, like, we missed Harper Kid and I. We missed the AW Dark before, right? The elevation that they take,
yeah.
Because, you know, Harper Kid wanted some food. He's hungry. So I'm like, I'll chill with you, man, in line. It took so long because they had so many of the concessions closed.
Yeah.
And they had one person working in there, right? Yep. Maybe the assistant. It was just brutal. So we missed the first hour of the elevation. And
that's part of it, which is, like, this is a professional wrestling show that's on every Wednesday.
Mm-hmm.
You got to run it like it matters, right? You got to run it at even if the building is old, you got to do something to make it seem like it's not just a old school building. And that, you know, I was cracking jokes with somebody because they were talking about Chase, and I go, you know, the craziest thing is the Cow Palace, you can only use cash. And when you go to Chase, you can't use any cash. Like, it's just the difference.
Cow Palace cash? I didn't use any cash.
I don't know. They may have had a credit card thing, but, you know, they didn't have any Apple Pay going on, you know, that whole thing.
Yeah.
So it's just, I get it out of their system, but they need to run. They need to run a major league building. And look, San Jose State Event Center, the one that we keep saying, that's mm-hmm. not souped up, like, glossy in any way, but it is a functional building, and getting in there, getting out of there, where the parking is.
Mm.
It's a functional place to do a show. So that, I think that stuff matters, especially when, you know, you're charging. Now they did pull the tickets back, but, you know, we paid probably $100 a ticket or something for Dynamite. So that's my initial thing about the Cow Palace. But okay, let's talk about some of this stuff.
Well, a quick question about the Cow Palace. Like, Tony, you know, Tony likes to run these historic buildings because he's a fan of the wrestling history, right?
Yeah.
Well, can you give us a minute, 45 second, just video of pictures. You know, you don't have footage.
Yeah, that would
have
been cool.
You could probably rip footage from YouTube, I'm sure. It's okay. I don't think there's anyone has the rights to it, right? Yeah. That's on YouTube. It might be grainy, but you can, you know, they have good production people that can kind of figure it out.
Yeah.
And they contact Rock Rims. He's a, you know, a ton load of pictures they could have used for that. You know, just and kind of had like a voiceover. Could have been Tony Schiavone just kind of voice over like the history real quick. Like if you're gonna run these buildings and just don't run it, like maybe you know, just honor it as well. And then maybe and that would like, oh, they're in the historic cow palace. Well, some person in Alabama might not know what the hell the historic cow palace
for
is.
This TV. And for the live audience, you know, Tony Khan did come out, I think it was right before Dynamite, to mention, you know, that he's so happy to be here. But otherwise, I don't think the Cow Palace meant anything to the show, right? Like, there was nothing specific to the Cow Palace. Like, there was no, except for the Battle Royal, which that I'm sure they did. They wanted to make sure they did a Battle Royal in the Cow Palace. But I think they killed that gimmick dead with the one that they gave us.
Yeah, I think a tear hit me. And it was Roy Shire's tear just when he's watching that Battle Royal from the heavens. Okay.
It was bad. All right, let's talk about Orange Cassidy and Big Bill.
Ooh,
I thought most of the match when Big Bill was on offense and they were taking it slow, I thought it was pretty good. But then they started doing goofy stuff, like going through tables on the outside that were set up by the evil manager.
That was the cutoff spot. That was the break spot as well.
And then, you know, Big Bill's a big guy, and to see him have to sell for these Superman punches. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he's like a tree, and then finally a tree falls down, and that's the way that he loses the match. I was like, I don't know. This is why maybe we need countouts and DQs sometimes. I didn't want to see Big Bill lose.
I know. What are you going to do with that guy now, right? And it's funny, too, as we – so at the beginning of Dynamite, we actually sat in across from the screen, and even though the crane wasn't in our way at that point, but when Orange Cassidy came out, I can't even see him. He is so small. The cameraman in front of him is blocking. I don't even see him coming. The time I saw him is when the cameraman moved out of his way and he was getting in the ring. It just doesn't go. You don't go wow when he comes out, you know, obviously. But, you know, Big Bill, of course, he's almost seven foot. He stands out. But guys like Takeshita, like he was a big dude.
Yeah.
Hobbs, of course, is a big dude.
Cesaro
is a big dude. Like a lot of those guys, you know, it just. Yeah, the wow factor. A lot of these guys didn't have the wow factor, in my opinion, as you know, when you go to like a WWE show and you see those guys, you know.
John Moxley and Adam Hangman Page were cutting their promos for the show. Personally, Moxley's promo was right on the money to me as a fan. He also had a little bit of extra production with the blood coming out and dripping. Yeah. And the way they shot it was grimy on steps. And so that mattered, I think. And then when you got Hangman's promo, who's like outside somewhere, no real production value. Look, it could have been shot on an iPhone. And he's telling the same old story that he's been telling for the last 2 months. And it just did not connect with me. And in my mind, I was like, you know, if I was a little kid, I would almost be 100% sure John Moxley was winning this match because he's just eating this dude up week after week after week. But as a smart wrestling fan, I sort of feel like Hangman has to win to the story they're trying to tell. But I think the live crowd was just like, one of these guys is really cool and one of these guys doesn't really have a lot of faith in himself. Like, I think that's who I want to win. But I do think Hangman has to win this match. It's been a weird program since the beginning, pretty much.
Yes, very much so. I thought Moxley's promo was good, got a good reaction. When Hangman came on the screen in the Cow Palace, no reaction.
Yeah, so
I thought that was very interesting because he's such a beloved those AEW fans, a beloved character.
And he's such a great wrestler in the ring.
I think so tough. I think ever since his return, you know, it's I'm talking before the concussion.
Yeah.
Has been pretty underwhelming. And, you know, maybe it's one of those guys that, you know, after the title just kind of lost some confidence or something like that. I don't know. But also it doesn't help that he's kind of this whiny guy. Like, you know, we just saw it the other couple weeks ago. He's like complaining that, oh, man, you beat me with a roll up. Well, it's wrestling, dude. It's a
And then Moxley's promo was like, you all the things that you're complaining about. Well, the same thing happened to me.
Mm-hmm.
And you get the excuse. And yet all I did was beat you. And like, you know, I should have. Yeah. And now there's even more excuse. And then when Danielson came out to cut his promo, which was basically like, you know, WWE told him he couldn't wrestle anymore and he had the really bad concussions. And you're talking about a guy who had worse concussions almost than anybody who's still actively working. And so he's just like, yeah, you know how I fixed that? Just loved pro wrestling too much and came back and fought through it. And I'm like, oh, my God. That's a babyface right here. Well, Hangman has been making excuses and losing his smile and not being able to see his cell phone, you know, with his son's photo and remembering it. Like, that may be true. And I thought that that was a great line when he cut it. But it's like, okay, dude, move on. Like, we're in a different spot on this, in this feud and in this match. Like, we need, like, John, I needed 10 seconds. Mm-hmm. John Moxley, I'm kicking your ass in San Francisco, and just go, just say it and believe it and be done. And it would have been better than what they did last night.
I mean, I feel like Heyman's going to win. Cause I think that was probably the original plan. I think the original plan ahead of time was MGF Danielson. MGF gets past Danielson, you know, and then his next opponent will be Hangman Page, who was supposed to be ready from a different opponent, but that opponent didn't work, you know, didn't want to do business. So now Moxley was the one that was put in a spot. And I think, but I think Tony honestly maybe needs to be an audible on this. Maybe needs to change plans. I know he kind of doesn't like that, but shit happens and things aren't. Mm-hmm. If people aren't getting over, I'm sorry, but Hangman is not getting over. I think he's going to be. I have a feeling at the Chase on Sunday at the pay per view, it's going to be more pro Moxley than it is pro the Hangman Page.
I think he needs to have a near 5-star match and just get over with the live crowd in the ring to save this thing, and which he could because he's a fantastic wrestler, and so is Mox. So,
well, I have a feeling it's going to be one of those double juice, something, you know, big, you know, Texas dead, double juice, all that, you know.
Yeah, yep. Wait, by the way, Texas death match and no holds barred match on the same show.
Who's a no holds barred match?
Jungle Boy and Christian.
Oh, that's right. Death match is on there. Oh, that happened too. That weird video. That
We'll get to that.
Didn't get a chance to watch it on the TV version of it.
So did you see the thing that happened to the Elite when they had come out and then the lights went out? Okay, I missed it because right when their song came on, people in front of me stood up, and I was like, I've seen the Young Bucks and the Elite come. Mm-hmm. I don't need to stand up here. And then the lights went out, and then I didn't see anything. So I missed them completely. Yeah. I missed my opportunity to see Kenny Omega, man. How did that thing go live? Because Dave was even asking me that today because he and I interviewed Jeff Jarrett.
Yeah.
And he was saying, like, how did the crowd react to when the Elite came out? Because he thought the Elite really, really needed to be on this show.
They had a good reaction, nothing overwhelming, not like superstar, you know, not the level of Powerhouse Hobbs, not even the level of Lucha Brothers later on.
Yeah.
They came out for their tag team Battle Royal deal. I might have missed it on social media. I didn't know that they were even planned to be on this show. I don't remember seeing anything.
And I don't remember either.
And as I was, fast forwarding the show, you know, I kind of fast forward through Orange Cassidy versus, you know, Morrissey, Big Bill. I didn't see them promote the Elite. So who knows why they were there? They're just there. They show up. Their music starts playing right before it kicks in, or just as it kicks in. Lights go out. People start booing. Lights go on. It's the House of Black. They beat up the Elite. Goes black again. The boos get lighter. Like, you know, like people know that what's going to happen. And then lights go on, they hold the belt, the six-man tag team title belts up, and they leave. And that was it. Like, so even like as I watched this that segment on television on the replay back, Tony Schiavone's like, what? Huh? That, you know, his little remarks. That was it. That was it. Like I did, and I purposely put it like a, like, I don't know, like a few minutes before that segment no one mentioned. I'll go, here comes the Elite. They're going to have a message to say. They're going to answer the challenge of House of Black. Nothing like that. They just showed up and got beat up, and that was it. I think it was a pretty lazy booking, honestly.
Now, the ladder match, in hindsight, maybe this should have been the second to last segment on the show.
Hmm.
But you can't, you know, you can't reverse do that as the show's happening. But the ladder match, the social media cry was because the referees were holding the ladders as these guys were doing crazy stuff. And I've seen a few different thoughts on it. Personally, I mean, I saw it happen at New Japan in Filthy Tom's match. The Young Boys were mm-hmm. holding down the ladder so that he could climb it. I didn't see how that was shot, so I was just assuming that they shot it well, where you didn't see the Young Boys holding. Did you see him?
Oh yeah, 100%.
Okay, so then that was an interesting way to shoot that. But my whole thing on the AEW thing is, like, for the Hobbs thing, he was really worried about falling off that thing. So yeah. So hold the ladder for this dude so we don't screw up our own finish. But let's not show the referees holding.
It's kind of hard. It was kind of hard for the production team to block out the referees, because one, Hobbs, you see him visually call him over to get in there, and then they're like, all four of them are all holding it down, and
yeah,
you know, that wasn't even the. I mean, I know a lot of people were focusing on that, the finish, and I know, like, everyone had a different opinion. Like, even Filthy Tom showed like a little picture of the referees holding his ladder, New Japan, but they're. What happened there was, like, they discreetly did it,
yeah.
Where and same thing WWE does it. You know, I'm trying to remember when I remember ECW. I think I've seen it where a referee came. I've seen many indie shows that this happened where referees came and help out. But as I'm watching this match on the broadcast, there's moments where Sammy Guevara is bringing the ladder over to climb on it to do his little swanton. By the way, you had a great picture of that. I have a video of that on your Fight Game Media. Mm-hmm. Check it out on our Instagram page.
Yep.
He jumps off that, you know, he's setting that up to, you know, put the other ladder and put Action Andretti across the ladder, and he's going to do the Swanton dive. But as he's trying to get Action in position, there's old Rice Brendsburg moving the ladder in position, you know, moving it over. Like, he's helping set the ladder. For good old Sammy Guevara to, you know, it's a lot of that looked bad, you know, as well. But yeah, I did not like this match at all. I thought it was, I'm happy that Powerhouse Will Hobbs won. Happy for him, you know, big moment in his hometown, big reaction. You know, great moment for him personally, but I just didn't think the match was good. It was a lot of stunts. If you like stunts, they did stunts, but they didn't have good psychology in the match. And I want to do some research for the show. I timed at the bell. It took him 5 minutes and like 30 seconds to actually go up. The first person to actually put the ladder in position to go up and try to get the golden ass gasket. And like, so, and then I even timed it. And to me, the dumbest wrestler in history, because he had this match won. Everyone was down. Everyone was out. And good old Commander. The old Commander making the biggest rookie mistake in his whole career. It took him 40 seconds to jump up, do his little walk the ropes, and do that crazy dive he did on everyone else on the floor. 40 seconds. And in that 40 seconds, Garrett, you and I, we could have scaled that thing in like what 10, maybe 15, and got that ass gasket down, no problem. We, you know, like
I might have had to have the refs get called over to hold the ladder.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we would probably pick a better ladder out, but it was just the psychology. Like, at least try to like work around trying to climb the ladder, try to get the prize, and try to win the match. And you could use that, and then use it to where, you know, you're doing spots, you know, off that and stuff, and it drove me nuts. I felt bad. It was like there's like a, like three rows in front of us. There's this nice couple. They're watching the show, and I'm like pointing out all the logical holes in this match, calling Commander an idiot, and this poor the wife looks at her. She starts laughing because she's like, "Yeah, why is he just not climbing the ladder? Why is that?" I'm like, "I know, because it's dumb, right?" And it's just Oh man, just embarrassing stuff. But and then like even Hobbs, like what they did with him. Remember, he was out forever in this match, just down. You only see him for a good like 3 to 4 minutes. That was after just him and Takeshka doing a double clothesline on the floor. And then when it was his time to come and knock Takeshka off the cage and he won. It's like the layout of this cage of this match was bad. It was laid out for stunts, but not laid out for a dramatic match.
Yes. Okay. I slightly disagree with you because
you cannot disagree with me, Garrett.
I'm not sure you can have great psychology in a multi-man ladder match like this, because it would, if you really had psychology in this match, it'd probably be way longer. You have to focus on certain things. And for a TV match, they didn't have the time. So they had to kind of zip through and make sure everyone got their
you
stuff.
You could gave them the time, right? Did we need Chris Jericho versus Peter Avalon? Did we need?
I mean, to tell the stories that they wanted to, they believed that they needed that.
You didn't need some of the stuff. They could, and that battle royal didn't need to go forever. You know,
yeah, like, that match. That's why I would have put this match, because at least you get that Will Hobbs pop at the end of the show instead of in the middle, and not the Cassidy and Danhausen sort of like, oh yay pop that they got for winning their match. So I was okay with it. I don't know what kind of match that they could have actually had in just the format of it, like so many people in that match.
Yeah.
Okay, so the one thing that's funny is we saw Eddie Kingston come out, and then we didn't see what happened to him after. I guess on TV they told the story of him just leaving, him and Ortiz just fighting.
They just say he left and that was it. And that I think that promo he aired was on social media only, right? After that's a fact.
Yeah, I think so. Where he quit.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's weird. But I don't understand that storyline at all. Like,
I would love a job where I could quit and then the company that employs me has a smaller company, and then I just quit the big company, tell them to F off, and then I just go work for the small company owned by the same company.
Yeah. Or, I mean, I think, who was it? Rocky Romero's maybe tweeted out, like, you have a home with us at New Japan or something. Like, if he's, say he's going to New Japan or something, and they work that deal out, like, why don't you just, like, do an emotional promo by him and saying how this is his dream and how he's always had his, you know, wanted to go to Japan and for New Japan and you know, go, you know, just get something cool like that. Maybe he comes back a conquering hero or something, or he almost does. Maybe he almost beats Okada for the title, but he gets close and you show highlights of that and how, but that loss, even though he lost, his dream didn't come true. It just fed his, it's fed his fire more. And now he's, you know, he's back in AEW. He's going to take what he learned in New Japan and apply it in AEW, and he's going to win a championship, damn it, you know, in the near future.
Chris Jericho beat Peter Avalon, like you said, and this was set up for Jericho to, since Jericho got outsmarted last week, to sign the match where the Jericho Appreciation Society is not allowed at ringside. He had to then outsmart Ricky Starks in this one, because he starts beating on Avalon after the match. Starks comes to save, and Jericho's like, look, brother, I said no JAS at the match, not now. And then they just jump him and they leave Ricky laying. So the reason why Action Andretti didn't come help him is because Daniel Garcia gave him the rock bottom. I think it was the rock bottom in the match before. So laid him out.
Oh, no, the Sammy Guevara thing was the took Action Andretti out. Remember?
Oh, was it? I thought for some reason I thought Garcia got him too.
So he did earlier, but yeah, but the final thing was the Swanton.
Got it. Yeah, we got video of that on Instagram. That was nuts. That was the craziest trust fall I've ever seen. So Starks, you know, got outsmarted Jericho, gets outsmarted here. Man, he needs to get a big win on Sunday, or else this is all for naught.
And no friends came out to help him. I know Action was hurt, but no one else came out to help him, right?
Yep.
Or late, you know, late. He came out late to help Peter Avalon. I know Peter Avalon's technically a heel, right? Unless I don't watch the AEW Darks, I don't know. But there's Jericho just beating the hell out of him with his bat. And then Starks comes after he stops. It just looked really weird. And at least it would have been better if he did this with a baby face, you know, like someone that actually people cared about. So when Starks comes out to try to help. And of course, then but the whole JS, not the whole screw, but it was like Garcia and Hager came out, right? And they did you see what happened when they were, because right after that segment, that's when the Hangman Page promo aired. Did you see what happened?
Mm-mm.
As Jericho and Hager and Garcia were leaving the ringside area, mm-mm, as the place went dark. Well, the place went dark, you know how their rampways lights up a bit, right?
Yeah.
I don't know what Hager was wanting to do, but he just like got on all fours, started humping the stage. And then
Shawn Michaels and the Canadian flag.
And then and then Jericho did it, right? And I was thinking, you know, that's kind of messed up, right? I mean, granted, Hangman Page didn't get no reaction when this promo popped up the screen, but now everyone started laughing at that.
They're goofing. They're not even, yeah, I didn't really even see it. Where I was, so I didn't even see it.
So they're taking a, I mean, that's a pretty dick move, dude. Like, your business is done.
Yeah.
This business is going to be happening right now with Hangman's time. Just don't take the crowd. And this happened a couple times on the show. People need to be a little more professional out there.
I thought Christian Cage got the best heat on the entire show with his promo about Jungle Boy.
Yeah.
Good live promo, old school, just like heat, good stuff. Crowd reacted big time. But I did not like Jungle Boy's video. I thought that was kind of out there. And yeah, I just don't like it when they do the death stuff, man. Like, like, you know, why do we gotta talk about Jungle Boy's pops and all that?
Yeah.
It's like, that's part of why Christian got the big heat. But at the same time, whenever I watch wrestling, and I know people tell me, you know, Dave will say, oh, it's just that's how they think they have to get heat. It makes me feel like, why do I watch this? And this is not to say that every TV show I watch is like upper echelon prestige. That's not it. It's more like making fun of not even dramatizing the passing of somebody or, you know, telling a story about the passing. It is making fun of somebody who died. Like, that's the stuff that I'm just like, gosh, aren't we beyond this yet? Like, didn't we learn anything from Eddie Guerrero and Randy Orton and Rey Mysterio? Like, why do we do this? Maybe that's why we do it, but I just get icky. I feel icky when they use that stuff for heat.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't feel that offended by it. I just thought the whole video promo with Jungle Boy was just kind of lame. And then when it ended, like, there's no reaction either from the crowd, really, other than like when they saw Christian Cage's tombstone, name on the tombstone, but there's a little bit of reaction, but nothing major.
Yeah, but that was because he sold it so well.
Yeah, he was good. Christian was good. I just kind of, I feel like, obviously, before Christian got hurt and hurt his tricep or whatever he hurt, that was going to be a pay-per-view match, what, November, right? Or something? Or was it November that I was supposed to do that, you think? Or some big match?
I don't know. Was that the Luchasaurus match, right?
That was Luchasaurus, yeah. So they're probably going to do it around December, right-ish, I'm guessing. And so I feel like Tony feels like he has to do it now, but what if he got a little creative with it? What if, because Christian was such an asshole, right?
Yeah.
And before he got hurt. And well, at the same time, before he brought back Christian, he had Jungle Boy go on a streak. He's on his own. He's going for a title. He's picking up wins. You know, then you have Christian coming back during that time. And like, you know, do you still want to, you know, are you still have a vendetta against Jungle Boy? He'd be like, you know what? It's over with us. We're done. The kid, all the best to him. I'm focusing on the title. You know, kind of like be a little more humble, Christian, all of a sudden, right? And then when Jungle Boy finally gets a major championship shot, maybe against TNT title against Samoa Joe, Christian Cage shows up and screws him out. And then, you know, just proves that he still has, you know, Jungle Boy on his brain and wants revenge on Jungle Boy, et cetera, et cetera. And that, you know, to what they did, I thought, I don't know. It seems kind of forced, and we're back at it like nothing. Nothing ever happened. I don't know. It's just not really into this program. I think for Jungle Boy, the match But against No Holds Barred, I kind of wish they had a regular match. They haven't had a regular match yet.
Oh, right? They haven't. I don't think
they haven't. Their first singles match is a No Holds Barred. The first singles match of NJF is a with Brian Danielson is an Iron Man match. Like, so stupid. Mm-hmm. At least there's two matches with Mox and Hangman to lead up to a Texas Death.
Yeah. Yeah. Very true. Riho and Toni Storm. Did you think that was the best match of the night?
I got to rewatch it on the replay on TV, but for live perspective, I thought it was the best wrestled match. I don't know if I like Toni Storm losing there at this point, because you're still kind of put. And I understand that it was Britt Baker that kind of distracted her, or maybe it was Jamie Hayter. I think it was the one that distracted her, and that's how Rio really ended up getting the win. So I guess you kind of protect Toni a bit there, but I don't know. I thought it was good. I think Rio, I don't have a problem with Rio like a lot of people do. I think she's a good smaller, you know, baby face and for her role. But yeah. I mean, Toni Storm and Saraya came out. They feel like stars when they came out. They have presence for sure. They got a good reaction. But nothing superstar level, but they had a pretty good reaction coming out.
Casino Battle Royal. I get it. You know, maybe these rules weren't necessarily explicit and, you know, about having a Joker and doing the way that they did it originally. Mm-hmm. Like, I get that part. But for Battle Royal's sake, and the way that they do surprises, and when you don't deliver a surprise, it sort of works against you. I thought this was like maybe the worst thing that they've done on TV in a little while.
Wow. It's up there. A very boring match live, in my opinion. When you're live, you can clearly see even more that when the guys are taking knees and just hanging out by the bottom rope while guys do their spots and, I think the crowd there felt like they're waiting for FTR to show up.
Yeah.
At the end.
Everybody was, I think.
I mean, when I was sitting with Heartbreak Kid Dave Rubio, we were sitting there and we were trying to figure out, like, well, it's Casino Battle Royale. Is there suits? Who's a suit? Who are they doing that? Is there a Joker?
They didn't do it at all.
And we're like all confused. And if we're confused, if the people in the television audience are confused, and I think Tony Khan was confused what he wanted to do here. And then at one point, like, we thought, okay, this is the tag teams that are in it, because they're not bringing out another team. But then we realized they're just in commercial break. And then once they came out of commercial break, they started doing the countdown, and out came whoever.
Yeah, it wasn't timed very well.
And then the eventual winners, I mean, Danhausen and Orange Cassidy. First of all, your hottest tag team lost the tag team titles, got screwed. And now we want to see a tag team match between the Guns and Acclaimed, right? You're just forcing Lethal and Jarrett. You're putting Orange Cassidy and Danhausen to kind of make it more of a goofball match as well. What is going on here? Is it just contract that they had Danhausen promised a pay-per-view match and he had to do it here, or same thing with Jarrett? I don't know.
It could be a reward for him being such a great merch seller. I think the four teams was a mistake. Like you said, should have been two. And then when you get down to, we need a babyface team so that we can even it out, I just think there are two really good babyface teams that I would rather see in that match. One being the Lucha Brothers, who were really over because of Penta and George Kittle. Dave said George Kittle was there. I didn't see him.
I didn't see him. He could have been in the back. He's usually in the front row, but they didn't show him on television.
Yeah.
I don't think they did. Lucha Brothers got the second biggest reaction of the night after Powerhouse Hobbs.
George Kittle said after his football career is over, he may be interested in wrestling. I would have shown the guy on TV if he was there.
Mm-hmm.
And then, so Lucha Brothers would have been my A1. My A2 would have been Top Flight.
Actually, they would have been my A1, honestly.
I would have chosen both of those teams instead of what we got. And so if we're getting to Danhausen and OC, did he need to wrestle the first match also? That was the other thing. Maybe he needed to wrestle it to get hurt. Or because anybody could have wrestled and they still could have done the best friends segment, right? I was trying to just figure out why they did it that way.
Just to kind of keep the mystery with the best friends not being in it for some reason. But, you know, I don't know. But I would have went with Top Flight because he already spent months pushing these guys, getting a lot of TV equity, you know, and big win over the Young Bucks. I know it was supposed to lead to the six-man tag title match, but they've been featured a lot. Like, if you're going to have to do this four-way, you know, Lucha Brothers, we've seen them in this position for last 3 years. I think it's okay. Lucha Brothers worked on the pre-show match for once, and then give these kids Top Flight a shot. You know, if you've been like, you're already pushing them, you've already been giving them all this time, you know, why don't put them in that position? But I don't know, it's just overbooked nonsense.
All right, and then in the main event, Angle, we saw Bryan Danielson cut a promo and MJF come out and say nothing.
Yeah,
the fans who saw Dynamite as sort of the best part of the week, there were people missing. MJF didn't cut a promo. If you're an MJF person, you want to see him cut a promo.
Mm-hmm.
No Sting and Darby, which we had mentioned. The Elite didn't really do anything. So Dynamite, if Dynamite is their, you know, is their top priority. There was a lot of people missing, and so I do hope that all the people who were at Dynamite, well, it's not going to be all because you're not going, but the majority of them do go to the pay-per-view, because then you'll really get to see all your stars. But if you went to Dynamite thinking like that was the show to be at for the go-home, I don't know. You're missing some folks there.
There had to be a timing issue at the last segment, because I looked at the clock on my phone, and it said, 6 minutes left. I'm like, man, are they going to give extra time? And by the time Brian ended his promo, I think it was right at 7 o'clock or 7:01 or something like that. So they must have been behind on time for sure, because that thing felt rushed. You know, it was a great promo by Brian. I thought it was very good.
That is awesome.
I just thought the whole thing, there should have been more there. So.
All right, we're going to play the segment that I did earlier this week with Chris Samsa, who just knows his stuff when it comes to New Japan. And, you know, Jeremy, he does the Speaking of Strong Style with Stephen Conway, and Jeremy has just really, just dived into the deep end of the pool on New Japan, and he's really, really doing his studying and stuff. So we went through a ballot, and, you know, we all three talked about it, and I broke ties if they just sort of disagreed on where to go with the ballot. So pretty good stuff. New Japan Cup starts this weekend, so let's go to that segment right now. Chris Samsa is in the house. Also, Jeremy Finestone. And our goal today is to create the greatest New Japan Cup bracket that is out there. We only want winners. We don't want any of this, we don't want to come in second place in any of the bracketology that is out there. So, Chris, what's going on, man?
Hello, hello. It's New Japan Cup season. This is my second favorite tournament on the calendar, but I love the simplicity of a single elimination. I love the size of this year's tournament compared to last year's double-sized tournament. So, and I love the makeup of this tournament, so I'm excited to talk through kind of where I think we're headed.
Jeremy Finestone did a bracket yesterday on Speaking of Strong Style. So my goal is for our bracket collectively to beat Jeremy and Steven's bracket from Speaking of Strong Style when it all comes down to it. Do we have a point system here? Like, did you create a point system, Chris, as far as or is this just about winners? Or is it just about who wins? You get the winner, right? Like, how are we scoring this?
So I've done, the bracket pools over the past couple of years. And that's not something I am doing this year, I don't think. If I do it, it's got to happen soon. But we can go by kind of the scoring system that I've always done, which is 1 point for the first round, 2 points for the second round, 4 points for the third round, and then I usually up it to like 8 and 12 for the semis and finals.
There we go.
That's how I would do it.
Let's use that.
I think that because the first round, while there will be upsets, you can usually sketch out who's going to pass through. Maybe not this year, though. I don't know. It's tough.
That is the other part of this, in that when I look at a tournament like this, I'm like, who do I want to see come out of this and who do I want to see advance? But that is not necessarily how New Japan books this tournament. I'm like, oh, chalk. Oh, Duke. Here, I want to pick Duke here. I want to pick Kansas here. I want to go Gonzaga. And then all of a sudden you have like Chase Owens like upsetting somebody, you know, in the second round. So that's also part of this. What we're going to do is, because Chris and Jeremy are going to explain why some of the favorites may not actually be the favorites. If this was if people actually bet on this, I feel like a lot of people would lose crazy money on a tournament like this. But for the video folks, obviously, if you're listening on audio, you won't be able to see this, but we're going to show the bracket here that Chris has put together as we do this. So it'll be kind of fun to do this thing live while we're going. So before we get there, as I set it up, Chris, the tournament, when it ends, what are we setting up here with the winner?
So this will set up a challenger for Sakura Genesis, which is the first week of April, and it'll set up a challenger for the IWGP World Heavyweight Championship. So it's kind of the big spring event, one of two big spring events, but probably the primary spring event for New Japan on the calendar is Sakura Genesis at the beginning of April. So this will set up a challenger for Kazuchika Okada on that night. So that'll be the main event of that show. So that show is traditionally at Ryugoku, and it's a bigger venue. It's not the Tokyo Dome by any means, but they could put a significant amount of people in the building if there's a, you know, probably a drawing main event and a pretty strong card around it, which it usually is. It is a big event. So so that's where this kind of comes into play. Back in, what was that, 2019, this actually set up the challenger for Madison Square Garden, which is when Okada last won the tournament and then faced Jay White. So that's kind of the level that this tournament is at.
Awesome. All right. Let's see if this works. Let's kick it off. Sonata and Taichi here in the first round. Jeremy, give me your thoughts on this matchup.
So a lot of the guys that have been around for a while all have had a new chapter in their careers in New Japan within the last year and a half. But one of the guys that really hasn't had a whole lot going on is Sonata. Granted, he had the injury with the orbital bone last year with the during the New Japan Cup. So he's had some start and stop, but this is a good opportunity for him to kind of reset and maybe go to next, whatever's next for him. And I'm choosing Sonata in this match.
Chris, do you agree?
So statistically, Sonata's the guy. He's always done really well in the New Japan Cup. He's 13-6 all time in New Japan Cups. And it's his sixth. This will be his sixth entry. So that's a pretty good clip, and he makes it pretty far. He's never been eliminated in the first round. In 2019, he made the final. And the other key piece to Sonata is, if you look at the quadrant, right, the upper left quadrant, Sonata's 10-2 against all wrestlers in that quadrant in singles matches.
With
all that said, I don't think Sonata is not in a place where I see him advancing very far into this tournament. So I actually think this is the year that Sonata gets bounced in the first round. I would pick Taichi.
Oh, you're picking Taichi. Jeremy's picking Sonata.
I'm giving you all the reasons why someone would pick Sonata, right? Stats guy, right? Sure. These are the facts and figures. But like, I'm watching what's happening, right? If I'm seeing Sonata, he's a lost soul. And Taichi is not. That man knows who he is. And
interesting.
I think to push the envelope and to push where Sonata is going to end up needing to go, which is probably something totally different than what he's doing right now, I think he probably needs to eat another loss. But that's not to say that he couldn't win. But I think there's a really good chance. These guys are really evenly matched anyway. But I think... Yeah. I think there's a good shot that Sonata eats the loss and it continues his kind of downward spiral.
Okay, here's a secondary question before I break the tie, which is, does either man progress past Kenta, or do you expect them to lose to Kenta?
I personally expect Kenta to go through on that match, no matter who, honestly, regardless of who he's facing, because I have some thoughts about the rest of this quadrant.
Okay. Jeremy.
So one of the key things that I was thinking was Kenta has a title, and I'm building out a Sakura Genesis card in which all the people are defending titles. So if Kenta lost his match and then whoever beat him, Sonata or Taichi, moved forward and lost in the next round, that's kind of where I thought it was going to end. But it's a chalk matchup between Sonata and Taichi. Whoever you pick, the outcome is essentially the same for me.
Okay, so I will break these ties when we do not have consensus. Mm-hmm. And just for the sake of it, and I'm already kind of ruining our greatest bracket of all time here because Chris and Jeremy are disagreeing. For the sake of it, I'm just going to keep Sonata here and we'll move on. But I imagine that things will get a little spicy here. So on paper, Naito versus El Fantasmo is not that tough of a matchup, but I'm assuming that we're expecting a little bit of upsets here in the first round. Is this going to be one of them, Chris?
Absolutely. So, and it's almost not even an upset because if Naito doesn't go deep into the tournament, he loses in the first round. And I think that this is a year where he loses in the first round. So between 2018 and 2021, Naito was in three of those tournaments when he wasn't the champion, and he lost in the first round of all three of those tournaments. So last year he went really deep. Obviously he was in the finals against Zack Sabre Jr. But you know, that leads me to believe that Naito's going to get bounced here. Plus, I think El Fantasma's got something going on.
Jeremy, do you concur?
I do. We had a very spirited debate yesterday, and I lost on this, on the consensus of Scott Edwards and Stephen Conway, both choosing Naito over El Fantasma, which kind of busted my whole bracket in general. So I was a little spicy about that one. I have El Fantasma going very, very far.
Okay, so we're going to go with El Fantasmo here. So Ren, Narita, and Evil. Chris, what does the on paper say, and then what do you say?
Well, there's not a lot of paper for Narita, right? And Evil is a former New Japan Cup winner. He's also a guy that I think is stronger in tournaments than he is outside of tournaments. So here we are in a tournament, in a single elimination tournament. I think people are expecting Narita to go through because I think they see the youth movement in New Japan, and it's real. It's a real thing. But I think Evil defeating Ren Narita actually sets up another never six man challenge. And I think that, you know, further down the line, Evil will actually be involved in some pretty important stuff. So I'm picking Evil.
Where are you going with this one, Jeremy?
I went with Evil as well. I'm in agreement that Ren Narita and his Strong Style faction, as the son of Strong Style, I'm legally obligated to mention that since my show is speaking of Strong Style. They have plans for him in the six man never title division. They won it off of Evil and House of Torture. So revisiting that at some point, and Narita never really got the win over Evil on that. He pinned Yujiro Takahashi. So there's still meat on the bone on that story. I think Evil getting the win this time after losing the title to that faction is probably the way to go.
All right. Now, what about, and actually, I guess I should say winner would be facing Jeff Cobb in the next round. And then winner would be facing Chase Owens between Fantasmo and Naito in the second round. Okay. So now we have Toru Yano, someone who is kind of just a wild card in every single tournament that he's in, against the former left-hander from the San Francisco Giants and San Diego Padres, Mark Davis. Oh, not the same Mark Davis. Talk about Mark Davis a little bit for people who don't know who that is.
Mark Davis is one half of Aussie Open, the kind of primary tag team in the United Empire. He's the
Featured on Dynamo, or
just
Rampage,
featured all over AEW and Ring of Honor. I believe he was on some of those tapings too. So, he doesn't do a ton of singles stuff, but that doesn't mean he's incapable. But also anyone can get Yano'd, right? Like this is the new. So here's the deal: Toru Yano has been in the most New Japan Cups of anyone. Which also means he has the most losses in New Japan Cups because he's never won one. So he's got 17 losses in this tournament. So, and that's just one loss per tournament, right? Because single elimination.
Yes.
So,
yes.
But he also very frequently gets at least to the second round. That's kind of his average, just to at least win one match per tournament. So anyone can get Yano'd, but if I'm looking down the bracket, I actually think that Mark Davis will be super motivated to beat Toru Yano because he wants to face Will Ospreay. He wants to get that match on the books. So I'm actually going to bet that Mark Davis wins, even though I don't think it's going to matter much going past Ospreay. But I think that this is a great opportunity for a unit versus unit match.
But isn't that sort of some of the frustration with this tournament, though, is you see a dream opportunity and they're like, Yeah. We're not going to quite give it to you yet. So something like Davis against Ospreay would be amazing. It'd be a lot of fun. But, you know, do they do that? Do they lean into that? Like, oh, for the hardcore American fan who wants to see this match.
Well, obviously, like, you know, when you're going to get that in something like a G1 when they're in the same block.
Right.
And you're right. This is a tournament where that doesn't often intersect. But if you take a peek up at the upper left, right, you're going to have Bullet Club versus Bullet Club.
Oh, yeah.
And then if you swing down to this one, I think you've got a really good shot of maybe a couple different United Empire versus United Empire matches.
Right, right.
So each of the quadrants has those intersections that I think they might actually go with this year.
Interesting. Jeremy, where did you go with this one?
So I look at this bracket, and then I look at the top right bracket with Yoshihashi, Kyle Fletcher, and Hiroki Goto. And Kyle Fletcher's the other half of Aussie Open. And it doesn't make a whole lot of sense for him to lose to one member of Bishamon, and then Bishamon goes to end up facing each other. It seems like they're positioning Aussie Open to look very, very strong. And at first glance, you'd think, you know, Toru Yano should probably move forward because of the interfaction warfare, but you know, there should be a really strong effort to make Aussie Open look like the tag team to beat in 2023. And in addition to that, having a dream match of Mark Davis and Will Ospreay near the end of the tournament is going to keep people wanting to watch the tournament much more than potentially Toru Yano versus Will Ospreay. So all I'm right. going to go with well, Mark Davis on this because Aussie Open 2023.
I'll go with the consensus. I would have just picked Toriano, not knowing as much as you guys, but just on the idea that, oh, I really want to see this other match. Well, that means they're just going to have Yano win. All right, let's go to the other side of the bracket here in the first round. Yoshihashi and Kyle Fletcher, like Jeremy mentioned. Jeremy, why don't you lead this one off?
I think that Kyle Fletcher and Mark Davis will potentially be challenging for the tag titles again with a potentially different outcome this time. And I think the first step to that is Kyle Fletcher defeating Yoshihashi. I don't have the statistics behind me, but that just seems like the way the winds are blowing.
What do you think?
Yeah, there's not much on the stats side to work with there, but Kyle Fletcher is a guy who has recently gotten some singles opportunities on the New Japan Tamashii brand, right? He wrestled Robbie Eagles, and he had another singles match against someone that I'm actually a little less aware of. I forget who it was, someone from that region of the world on those couple of shows. And Kyle Fletcher's a guy that I think you're going to see get some big opportunities inside and outside of the tag team division with New Japan. So I think Kyle Fletcher defeats Yoshihashi here.
All right, we got consensus and to face Hiroki Goto in the second round. All right, Shingo Takagi and Aaron Henare. Chris.
Yeah, so Shingo holds the KOPW, and which means he needs a challenger, right? Jeremy really wants to book this out.
I did not want to think of Aaron Henare as a challenger on there.
It's just going to... This tournament is literally just to build out the Sakura Genesis card, which is not that far from the truth, to be perfectly honest.
Right.
With that said, if you're going chalk, right? Like, if you're going chalk, like, Shingo's in the final four. He's already there.
Right. Yeah, how does this dude lose?
Right. But I think there's a really good chance this is one of those first round upsets. Hanari wins, and then because Hanari's kind of at that level of the KOPW, where it could be an interesting thing for him to like get wrapped up in for a little while. And honestly, he and Shingo could have some cool interactions. So I'm going upset special here with Aaron Hanare.
All right, Jeremy. It sounds like you're disagreeing.
It's a lot of logistical problems. No, it's all a lot of.
Oh, you agree?
When you go later on into the bracket and trying to argue between potentially Tama Tonga and Shingo Takagi as the guy to move on, one of the guys doesn't need to lose that match in that fashion. And so I'm going to go with Aaron Hanare as well.
This is a Santa Clara upsetting University of Arizona here in the first round. All right, that person's going to face Tama Tonga in the second round, so we'll go with Hanare for consensus here. Finishing out this side, David Finley against Tomohiro Ishii. Now, we saw Finley in San Jose. Jeremy and I saw him cut a pretty badass promo. On, I think a little surprising to me that he actually said some of the words that he did say, coming out of the Eddie Kingston and Jay White match. So it seems like there's going to be some attention on this dude. Does that mean that he beats Ishii, Chris?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think that there's any question. That's actually my like most confident pick of the first round. Part of that's because Finley showed up and told us what to expect when he showed up and you know, demolished Jay White even further with his shillelagh. Finley also had a really good New Japan Cup in 2021. The last time he was in the cup, he made it all the way to the semifinals. So he has shown himself, and he had a really good run in the G1 at the beginning of the G1 last year too. So if you're looking at maybe a 4-5 match arc, David Finley has that in him. And I think that no one's really sure what he's trying to accomplish or like where he's trying to go, but he's definitely made himself into a conversation point as we look at the first couple of rounds of this. So I think Finley goes through. Ishii, again, has had, you know, you'd think he would do better, but he's been bounced in the first round of 6 of the 14 New Japan Cups he's ever been in. So not hit or miss, right? That's about 50-50. So it's
not bad for his body that he doesn't go very far in this tournament.
Sure. This is not Ishii's lane, right? Like this is not the tournament he shows up for historically. So I would say that David Finley's got a really good shot at winning here.
And Jeremy just nodded while we were making this pick.
He's going so far in this tournament, guys. Like you don't take out Jay White, get that place a spotlight, and then get bounced out in the first round.
This bottom right quadrant, though, like while we're here, is really, really interesting. I could see 5 of the 6 guys going through to the final 4. Like you could make a case for anyone but Yujiro at this point.
So does that mean you think Yujiro's losing to Shota Umino?
I don't think he's losing.
let's just move on.
Every now and then he picks up a win, but I mean, against someone like Shota, who I think you want to put on camera pretty frequently, especially in these tournament situations, I think Shota's going to take care of business.
I was just basing it on him saying that Finley was like his most no doubt about it pick, and then so that's why I was just wondering.
Well, it's like Shota Umino is now on the New Japan World like menu card. He replaced Jay. Like they're all in on Shota Umino.
Well, look at him. He's beautiful. Wouldn't you put him on the pictures too?
All right, now let's go to second round. Sonata versus Kenta, and we kind of talked about this. Do we think that Kenta's actually coming out of this into the the Sweet 16, or is it the final? Is it
that would
eight?
Be the eight?
The eight. Yeah.
I think Kenta's moving on past whoever. Right, I would have picked Taichi, but he's moving. I think Kenta's moving on past this round.
What do you think, Jeremy?
Narratively, it works either way, so I can go with Kenta.
So let me explain where I'm at, is that I think El Fantasmo is going to buzz through Chase Owens and Kenta, right?
To get to the final four.
It's a hierarchy of Bullet Club.
Right. And then we'll get to the rest of it.
All right. Well, let's move it here then. Let's just move. Let's, Wait, oh, it's
moving on. El Fantasma.
It shows a zero, I think, because I'm actually using Sheets instead of Excel. Oh. It doesn't show Fantasma. So that's probably why it is. But this zero is actually El Fantasma.
You can probably type in it if you wanted to.
Oh, can I?
Yeah.
I don't think so.
Highlight it, cut, paste, all good.
No, we can type it here. Nope. Yep.
Yeah. That's
okay. So, so next we have Evil and Jeff Cobb. Jeff Cobb got the bye. Evil, we have him moving past Ren Narita in the first round. What are we thinking about Jeff and Evil?
Jeremy, you go. I want to hear your thoughts.
I think it's going to be Evil because I think you need to save Jeff Cobb versus Will Ospreay for another scenario. But I would not be, I wouldn't be shocked if Jeff Cobb, you know, like went forward. I just, my gut says Evil, if he's going to beat Ren Narita, is going to go one more before there's the inevitable face off with Will Ospreay.
Yeah, I could go either way on this. And it's really just about who I want, who I think El Fantasma ends up meeting in the final four. Because if he's really going to buzz through Bullet Club, Bullet Club, Bullet Club, then obviously it's got to be Evil, and then Evil's got to pass through. If El Fantasma's big scalp is Will Ospreay, which it is and should be, I think, then I think Evil wins and Ospreay bounces him.
Interesting.
Because I think the bigger match, the huger match for the semifinals, because of their history, is El Fantasma versus Will.
So one caveat that I want to point out here is that I'm booking Will as a babyface in this tournament. I don't know if everyone else is doing that because there are a lot of people that that still treat him as a heel, but he's inevitably going to get cheered with the matchup that he's going to be having in some way, shape, or form. And there's going to be potentially disappointment if he doesn't make it to the finals or win the finals. And so when I'm coming up with it, I'm looking at Will as the good guy, even though he's more of a tweener, not whole heel right now. And I needed to point that out because some people might be confused as to what my mindset might be when it comes to that.
Will was pretty aggressive against Taichi, but they're both kind of tweener guys. Mm-hmm. So he just kind of like fit into that role. I hear you. I hear what you're saying. I actually had this discussion on a different podcast by making the kind of the same point you were making, is that like when Will doesn't have a title, he becomes baby-faced like almost immediately. Yes. It's just his persona and how it happens. So right now I see Will as this kind of broken down, scrappy underdog after like getting beaten down by Omega. But then he was the heel in the Tai Chi match. So could go either way on it for sure. I think if I had to lean one way or the other, I think Will Ospreay is going through Mark Davis. And I do think Evil's defeating Jeff Cobb. So I think the match that's going to end up coming up is Ospreay versus Evil. That one is more of a coin toss to me, though.
Interesting. All right. I'm with you all the way through that bracket.
So we got none chance here for Mark Davis.
Correct.
I think that would break the mold too far.
Okay. All right. So now let's finish up this other side. Fletcher and Goto. Who wants to start?
I think Fletcher's beating both of the Bishamon wrestlers. Oh, and that's going to just clearly set up the tag title match at Sakura Genesis or maybe something in the US. But Goto, I mean, while I'm here, Goto is Mr. New Japan Cup. He's won it three times. He's the only guy that's won it twice in a row. And he's got the most wins in the tournament ever. So like this is a place where Goto shines, but I just don't think that's his prerogative right now. He's really wrapped up in the tag situation, and he and Yoshihashi are really trying to establish themselves as big time tag team, you know, like a big time forever tag team that people remember. And the thing is, they are also defending the tag titles in a couple of days. So there's a chance there's a chance that they're not the tag champs. Like I have to throw that caveat in here because they could certainly lose to Tanahashi and Okada, but that is also kind of a stretch to me. So I think
we had the same conversation on our show that you cannot rule out a title change on the anniversary show, as far-fetched as it may seem, but there does seem to be plans for these two tag teams after the fact titles involved would make it more important.
And if you're Kevin Kelly, you hammer the idea that this is Goto's tournament, and it makes Kyle Fletcher's win seem even more impressive.
There you go.
All right. Henare and Tama Tonga.
This one seems pretty chalk to me. Yeah.
All right.
I don't think Henare gets to get himself into the never open weight conversation just yet.
And then David Finley and Great Okan.
Finley.
So my official pick on this quadrant of the bracket is Great Okan.
Oh.
Okay. Sounds weird, right? That's just because the rest of my picks are foreigners. So, and I just don't think we go to a Final Four that's all foreigners outside Japan. So at some point, someone from Japan needs to get to that Final Four. And Great Okan, I think, is the most likely to me.
And Jeremy, your reasoning for Finley.
I think that David Finley will be Tama Tonga's challenger at Sakura Genesis for the never open weight title. And they have to get to that point. That is okay. Basically my big, because if you go all the way through, they're trying to strengthen out David Finley. And if you have him challenging for a top level title that Tama Tonga was wrestling against Jay White at that same level at some point a few months ago, it seems like the kind of level that they want to establish David Finley. And I feel like they're trying to establish him as kind of their own wild card Moxley kind of character who isn't really aligned with anybody, but just causes chaos. And I don't know if that's where they're going, but that's the vibe I'm getting. And I just, to establish that, you have to make him dangerous at a top level.
So who do you have actually coming out of this quadrant?
Me?
Yeah, in your personal
David
bracket.
Finley.
Okay, so you have David him Finley. Beating the Zack Sabre Umino winner and then getting to the interesting. All right, I want to hold off on that. I'll break the tie here, but Umino and Zack Sabre Jr.
I think Zack wins. I think everyone thinks Umino's going to win because they want him to be the next TV title challenger, but I have kind of different designs on that.
Would you go with him,
Jeremy? It would make sense that Zack Sabre Jr. does return to the Final Four in some way, shape, or form because he was last year's champion. I had Shota Umino winning and challenging Zack Sabre Jr. at Genesis. I got cold water poured on me just now.
I think the winner, whoever it is, Finley or Great Okan, the winner of that is going to be the one who challenges for the TV titles next. Because if you look at kind of the demographics that they're trying to establish for that TV title, those guys are both young, they're new, they're up and coming, they're commutable, I guess you could say. They're willing to come to America, willing to go to the UK, right? They're all over the place. So same with Zach, right? But I think you could get either Finley or Great Okan into that lane. And I think people imagine this title to be like Umino and Narita's title, but I think it's more about these guys that are a little bit lost and not sure exactly where they slot or what their lane is. And those are the guys that are going to end up in this TV title situation. So, you know, that said, I think Zach goes through here and then loses in the round of eight.
And so you had Great Okan beating Zach here in your bracket.
Yes.
Okay. So we'll split hairs and we'll just do. We'll just do that. And we already said the next guy will come out of here.
I think they come out of the top side of that. Yeah.
Okay. So then now going back so we can create our Final Four here, Kenta and El Phantasmo. I think everyone pretty much said that Phantasmo's getting Final Four. Is that yes. What I'm getting?
Yeah.
Okay. And then on the other side, we have Evil and Osprey. And if the idea is to get to Phantasmo and Osprey, so we're having Osprey pass through.
Yes, but this would also check your boxes of having the one non, and Will Osprey will still have a match on the second tonight second to last night of the card of the New Japan Cup.
Yeah, I think Ospreay, but Evil also works for like my kind of conceptual view, because then if El Phantasmo buzzes through Chase Owens, Kenta, and then maybe Evil on the way to maybe even getting to the final, that works too. But I think El Phantasmo's bigger scalp, just based on their old rivalry, is Ospreay. But because you slotted David Finlay on the other side, I need a Japanese guy in the final four, so let's go with Evil.
Okay. All right, and then Fletcher and Tama Tonga to flesh out our top four.
Tama Tonga.
I go Tama Tonga here.
All right, so Phantasmo and Evil to get to the final two.
ELP.
I think El Phantasmo goes through, yeah.
All right. And then on the other side, we have Tama Tonga and David Finlay.
Tama Tonga.
I think Finlay wins this.
Okay.
Because, to your point, I think he loses the championship match, which then bounces him back to a never title against Tama Tonga.
Yeah. Okay.
All right.
Yeah.
So David Finlay. So our final two is Phantasmo and Finlay, and I think you guys are on the Phantasmo winning this entire thing.
Yes.
Yeah, and I think it'll be a really establishing moment for him, and then I don't think anything really happens with him maybe leading Bullet Club or talking about leading Bullet Club until we get to Dantaku, which is where Bullet Club things happen in May. But I think this sets him up to have a really probably a great match against Okada, really truly puts him in the heavyweight conversation. And honestly, he's got a great history of winning tournaments. He won two Super J Cups in a row. Like, single elimination tournaments seem to be his jam. So this is a good shot for him. It seems a little crazy to put El Phantasmo versus David Finlay into the championship, right? Like, is that a marquee match? Does that sell tickets, et cetera, et cetera? El Phantasmo is a big star in Japan. Like, people really, really like him, and they see him at kind of getting up to that level. But also, this is a tournament where they make guys. Like, this is not the G1 where things really end up pretty chalk by the end of it. Like, wild things happen on the booking side of the New Japan Cup. So this wouldn't be the most, you know, outlandish thing to happen, truthfully. I mean, guys like Bad Luck Fale have gone really deep. Zack Sabre Jr.'s won the thing twice, right? Like, guys go farther than you think they would in New Japan Cup. Even look back to Finlay a couple of years ago. He made it all the way to the semis, and no one was even thinking of him at that point.
All right, so if you have a bracket and you want to go to Chris's website to fill out a bracket, you can share it. If you are part of our Discord, we have a New Japan Cup thread that's going on, and we're all sharing our brackets in there. So I will share this in there. And I don't know, Chris, a bunch of people are probably going to be tweeting brackets at you on Twitter as well.
I will have my official bracket up somewhere. Well, once it's posted on New Japan or NJPW1972.com.
Okay, so
I feel like I was surrounded by the smartest people in the world talking New Japan Cup brackets and made so many good arguments to me, and we all might be wrong. It's going to be amazing.
We're all definitely wrong.
Well, yeah, that's the brilliance of it, and that's why I said, like, when I look at this, I go, okay, what's the match I want to see, and then I pick against it, because it's like not really what this tournament is usually about. It's about like creating other opportunities. So, Jeremy, after having this conversation with Chris, does it change your mind if you were to fill out a solo bracket just again? You know,
oh,
you did your show last night. Now you talk to Chris. So thoughts.
Always,
maybe
it's always a work in progress. I talked to Chris yesterday on our Discord. He frequented and threw out a couple of nuggets of potential statistical information that can help you sway your opinions. And talking to Scott Edwards and Stephen Conway last night, they pointed out stuff between Will Ospreay and Shota Umino that they could go back to, Will Ospreay versus David Finlay that they could go back to, Sonata versus Will Ospreay has stuff that they could go back to. There were so many different arguments about so many different nuggets that they've laid out over the last couple of years that you want to find an argument and stick to it. There's something that you can, like, plant your
Okay, so you can listen to Jeremy's show. It's on the Fight Game Media YouTube channel. He recorded it with Scott Edwards from the Five Star Joshi Show and Stephen Conway. And Chris, where are we finding you these days?
Yeah, so you can find me on Twitter at @TheChrisSamsa. And then kind of my big work right now is going up on the official New Japan English website. So I'm kind of the resident analyst there. So I'm doing a series of bracketology leading up to what will end up being my official Final Four picks. And then I'll do another article on the day that the Final Four is finalized, as well as one for the finals. So you can find me at njpw1972.com.
And tournament starts this weekend, right?
Tournament starts Sunday. Yeah, Sunday the 5th, and then carries into the anniversary show, which is on Monday the 6th, and then goes on for 12 more dates over the course of, I think it's like 20 days. So it's a whirlwind, but every card has, I believe, two New Japan Cup matches on it. So if you're a kind of a match selector, you don't have to watch the whole shows. You can just watch kind of the two tournament matches each day, or kind of, you know, bundle them all together and catch up as it goes. And I'll tweet out like link threads as the rounds go through.
All right, John, back to shut down this show. It is the weekend right before the big AEW pay-per-view. Give me your interest level. I want an interest level 1 through 10. Ooh. And then I want to do this again on Monday. I'm gonna write this down to see if it reached your interest level, if it was below your interest level, or if it was higher than your interest level, what we actually got. So give me your interest level for the show going into the show.
You know, I'm actually fairly interested. I'm gonna go with 7.
Okay. That's what I was gonna go with.
But you know, I've been more than 9 and 10 before, because there's still, you know, some good stuff was building to on those little shows and some interesting matches. This one not as, but there's still always potential for newsworthy outcomes and also moments. You never know. You never know if the old guy from Chicago, Mr. Clobbering.
Well, that's the other thing, right? I think there's a little bit of an expectation for at least something to happen. We'll see. I was very inspired by Bryan Danielson's interview today, where he said that, you know, kind of goes in against conventional thinking that you do all the blood match and then you still have to follow up in the main event. Mm-hmm. And he's like, but wrestling is going to be our thing in that main event. So I got pretty excited hearing him sell it like that. So I think that's going to be a really, really good match. And, you know, it's really an opportunity for MJF to continue to show that he is the goods. He feels a little cold this last couple of weeks, but I think he's still so talented. So I'm hoping that he has that type of match that we all are hoping that he gets to. I think that'll be really cool thing to talk about after. All right, so we will be back on Monday night to do our recap of AEW Revolution. It'll be a day after most everyone else's, but we'll have the mix of the live thoughts and John's thoughts on watching the broadcast. And then we'll be back on Thursday. So two shows next week in this very feed. All right. For John, I am Double G. We'll see you when we see you. Peace out.